like disease. Temperatures rising soon, we're gonna have a fever. We can't keep doing what we've been doing so long.
Hallelujah. Welcome to the Green Front. I am your host, Betsy Rosenberg. We can't keep doing what we've been doing for so long. Most of it with our is in the sand, or at least not knowing what we now know. So it is time to wake up and smell the carbon, as we say here on the program a lot. I am very excited about today's show, doing another live one from my perch here in the Bay Area, Northern California, where the weather is indeed a little odd. We had cool weather and rain and even a few lightning strikes in the last couple of days in the Bay Area and some of the outer regions. That doesn't usually happen in August, but of course that's nothing compared to the record heat and, of course, the continuing drought and, most of all, the wildfires that are burning around the country. And that is, in fact, the focus of our first segment. We'll be speaking with Bill Gattert in just a moment. He runs the website Wildfire Today. He is the editor-in-chief there, and he's going to give us a rundown on what's still burning, what's at stake in terms of homes and lives, and also how unusual this is with this many burning at this time of year. Of course, it's only mid-August, and at least here in Northern California, our fire season really heats up in September, October, or at least traditionally we see Indian summer. So we'll be checking in with Bill in just a moment, and very pleased to welcome to the program my co-host, D.R. Tucker, who will be joining us for the first half at least. And after we speak with Bill, we'll be checking in with someone who is new to the program, but not to us. D.R. and I really enjoy his blog site. Miles Grant has a program, I should say a blog site, called The Green Miles, and he's been talking about climate change quite a bit. And he talked about David Roberts of Grist's recent great essay about how he is suffering from some climate burnout, needs to take a year-long sabbatical. We hope to get Dave Roberts on the show next week. And then in the second half of the program, I'll be speaking with the newly appointed, just a couple of hours ago, Lindsay Allen was named as the new executive director of Rainforest Action Network, and she'll be joining us. And if you'd like to join us, please call the PRN number, the studio number. You can ask Lindsay Allen any of your questions about the new direction, if it is going to be new, or at least a refocused, a re-energized focus of Rainforest Action Network. That is, of course, in the wake of the tragic drowning last December of the very, very formidable Rebecca Tarbatten. She was at the helm of Rainforest Action Network, which is always impressive and always bold, and Lindsay Allen is apparently up to the task and then some. So we'll be chatting with her at the bottom of the hour. First, I want to say hello to my intrepid co-host, DR, and also welcome Bill Gattert to the show.
Yes, Eva.
Bill, it's good to be here.
Yes, Bill, we are really following these fires, Sun Valley area, Haley, Idaho, the focus of the last couple of days. Want to hear about the latest on that fire and also how many fires are burning, wildfires around the country. Does it just seem like it's more than usual, or is it in fact? And how much can we tie this to climate change? Give us, you know, an overall picture right now.
Well, the fire that you mentioned near Haley, Idaho, the name of that fire is Beaver Creek, and that fire has burned 106,000 acres. That's one of quite a few fires burning in Idaho. But overall, there are at least 51 large fires that are burning uncontained. And the National Interagency Fire Center has instituted a National Preparedness Level 5, which is the highest that can go, and that governs how prepared the federal wildland fire agencies are, how many firefighters they can mobilize, and it describes the state of wildland fires right now and how many resources are deployed to fight those. And we only get to preparedness level 5 when there's likely to be a shortage of firefighting resources, both firefighters on the ground and aircraft to fight those fires.
What is the expectation of this group of wildfires? We you know, that's one of the big concerns with regard to climate change, the expense of these you know, disastrous events. What are we looking at in terms of a cost?
Well, we are pretty convinced that climate change is affecting the number of fires we're having and the size of them. The average size of fires over the past 15 years has doubled. But the fires that do burn, they burn more intensely, they burn more quickly, and they're much more difficult to put out.
And what about this trend towards, at least in some of the more affluent areas, like Ketchum, Haley, Sun Valley, Idaho fire, where they actually bring in private firefighters to help protect property? Is that something that you think is becoming more common? Is that something that is a good development? My stepson is a firefighter here in Northern California in the town of Healdsburg, and he happened to be over last night. I asked him what he thought. He personally felt it was, you know, could be dangerous because they don't always have the same, you know, practices and you know, coordination, you know, with the usual local firefighters, and so that can actually cause problems as well. I don't know if that's just his personal opinion or if you have any opinion at all on that trend.
Well, that is a trend that we first started noticing about 2 or 3 years ago when they had several large fires in the front country of Colorado. You usually only see that for very high-value homes that have a very steep insurance premium to begin with. And in some cases, the insurance companies may charge an extra rider, an extra cost to provide that fire protection. But what they do is when there is a fire that is threatening one of these high-value homes, they send in these private contractors, these privately operated firefighters, like you say, and they'll go to that home and they'll sit there and protect it. But like you said, there can be some coordination problems. Many of these contracted firefighters working for the insurance companies do have regular firefighter experience, wildland firefighter experience, so they're used to working within the infrastructure, but there's no standards that these insurance companies have to abide by in order to employ these firefighters. So you could get that quite a range of experience and their ability to work within the larger organization of the incident management team running the fire.
You mentioned the insurance industry, and that goes to the question of, you know, the insurance industry expressing concerns about climate change. Could that industry do more to sort of emphasize to the public the risk that climate change causes in terms of, you know, increasing the frequency and severity of these wildfires?
Definitely. And we are starting to see some of that from some of the insurance companies. Some of them are actually sending out inspectors to homes that live in a wildland urban interface environment, and they're threatening to cancel their policy unless they take some responsibility to make their homes a little bit more fire safe by removing some of the vegetation around them, using non-combustible materials on the structures, and that sort of thing. But there's much room for improvement. Not all insurance companies are doing anything at all in that regard, but that's one of the keys, zoning instituted by counties and cities and insurance companies. They can work together to do a lot to make these homes more fire safe, because there's no way you can put a fire truck at every house when you have, say, 100 or 500 homes or 1,000 homes all threatened by one fire. Homeowners have to take some responsibility.
Bill, I don't know how much you follow the politics of climate change, but we do very heavily and regularly here on the Green Front. What do you think, regardless of just some of the calls by some Republican legislators and some would-be presidential candidates, specifically Mitt Romney, Rick Perry, you know, saying that we need to cut back on how many firefighters we have in the country and, you know, cut to save costs, really cut back on some of these crews. At the same time, they tend to be you know, from states where there's, you know, a lot of, well, all the states are having, you know, all kinds of disasters, not necessarily natural disasters, but in particular, Rick Perry, when he was running for president, we noted was, you know, in a state where half of his, you know, counties were, you know, in emergency mode because of fires, and he's calling for, you know, cutbacks at the national level on, you know, emergency services, including firefighting.
Well, obviously, as a firefighter for 33 years, I'm not in favor of cutting back even more on firefighters. Over the past several years, there have been significant budget reductions in, at the federal level and many state levels, too, in the amount of funds that go towards firefighting and firefighters. For example, in 2002, we had 44 large air tankers, and And beginning this year, we only had 8 large area tankers, which is a huge reduction. And just from last year, the Forest Service is employing 500 fewer wildland firefighters than they had last year. So additional budget reductions over what we've already seen, in my view, is not the answer.
At the risk of being, you know, I wouldn't say callous, but perhaps being a bit too snarky, when you think of the people who've been, you know, basically forced out of their homes as a result of these wildfires, do you think any of the people who've been forced out of their homes, forced out of their residences, forced out of their businesses, do you think any of those people, if they did previously, still think climate change is a hoax?
Well, I certainly can't speak for them. And as you know, one weather event one day or one week does not necessarily prove or disprove climate change. But I'm sure that some of those people that are forced out of their homes, they'll at least think about that while they're sitting in a shelter or in a motel or at a friend's house over the next few days.
Now, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, where I grew up and where I live in Northern California, our worst fire season tends to come, you know, starting now all the way through October. Of course, the big Oakland Hills fire back in 88-89 came in late October. Are there other parts of the country that also still have the worst ahead? And, of course, that would be speaking from, you know, historical perspective traditionally and, of course, with global weirding, as we call it. Anything's possible, but here we're just gearing up. Is that the case elsewhere or not so much?
Well, in the southeast United States, they have a spring and a fall wildland fire season, so they'll be coming into their fall fire season in about a month or so, but they typically, of course, don't have the 100,000-acre devastating fires that force thousands of people out of their homes. The southwest, Arizona and New Mexico, they're getting into their second fire season right now that the monsoons are slowing down. And Southern California is frequently the worst of their wildland fire season, begins in, say, September and can go through December, although firefighters there over the last 10 years will tell you that their fire season never ends. They can now have large fires 12 months out of the year.
It's terrifying to think about. And do you think that enough members of the public are beginning to realize just how much of a risk that firefighters are facing as a result of climate change? We always talk, you know, generically about, you know, the heroism of firefighters, but now in this era, in this warming era, you know, the heroism of firefighters is more important than ever before. Do you think that the general public realizes that firefighters are, in fact, on the front lines of climate change and deserve respect for their efforts to combat this threat?
Well, I'm not sure that they'll connect climate change with the vulnerability of firefighters. Some of them may, but certainly with the deaths of the 19 Granite Mountain hotshots in Arizona on June 30th, the safety and the vulnerability of wildland firefighters is a lot more before the public than it has been. So I think there's a little bit more sympathy in the public's eyes of what firefighters do since that June 30th catastrophic event.
And have you had more hits, more interest in your website, just as we've seen the number and severity of the wildfires, you know, in our country growing in the last couple of years?
Yes, I first started it in 2008, and in the last few years, the visitation of the site has grown quite a bit. And whenever there is a large fire that impacts a lot of people, we'll usually cover that. And, of course, a lot of people go to the site to see what's happening near their communities when there's a large fire nearby.
Yes, it's definitely a series of tragedies that are taking place. Do you think, I mean, you did mention, you know, the idea of no one weather event confirming climate change, but a lot of weather events can certainly make the point. Do you think that this is, or this past year, if you count back to Superstorm Sandy, do you think that we've hit sort of a tipping point in public awareness of the risk? In other words, do you think that more and more people are beginning to figure out, hey, this is a problem and we need to do something about it before more property is destroyed and more lives are lost?
I think you have a point there, at least as far as Hurricane Sandy. I mean, that hit an area, as you know, that does not frequently see hurricanes, at least not on the level that you see in Florida, for example. And I think there has been a connection with climate change and Hurricane Sandy and these fires burning in Idaho that are near millionaires and movie stars' homes that garners a lot of publicity. And then, like I said, the 19 firefighters that died all at one time, I think some people are starting to connect the dots.
Let's hope so. Even some meteorologists are starting to connect the dots, and that's in part, you know, as a result of a lot of activism, forecast the facts, in particular focusing on meteorologists who have, until very recently, not necessarily been connecting those dots. We saw that begin to happen in mainstream media, more so, of course, after Superstorm Sandy, and a little bit less so with these fires, but recently, again, it is being mentioned, not always, not enough, not loudly enough, but it is starting to happen. So I guess we can hope that, with the news getting worse as far as the weather, and when you turn on, as I say, you turn on the news these days, it almost seems like you're watching the Weather Channel with something or other happening, it seems, every week, that people will start, not just the media, but the public, really making those connections and saying, oh, my, this really does affect me, my community, my kids, you know, my country, my future, my grandchildren. I better tune in and find out not only what's happening, but what we can do about it.
Yes, exactly. There's a lot that the public can do that's related to climate change and wildland fires, like I said earlier, about making their homes fire safe and taking some responsibility and monitoring the string of weather events, like you say, that come one right after the other, that when you start connecting those dots, then the debate about climate change, in my mind, is over.
We certainly could not agree more about that debate, and luckily we're starting to see more and more efforts and part of mainstream media. We have to give a shout-out to Chris Hayes with his documentary, The Politics of Power, which aired last Friday and has been hard to find on the web, as those of us who have been looking to try to see it who might have missed it when it did air. But I did see parts of it, and they did not feel obligated, fortunately, as I would not expect them to be, to have, quote, the other side, meaning naysayers, doubters on climate change. And then also Al Jazeera America, I think, did a half hour, including with our friend and climate scientist extraordinaire Michael Mann, and did not feel compelled to, quote, have the other side on. So that is small progress, a little bit late in the game, but I guess we have to acknowledge it because it is, in fact, improvement.
Exactly. If you ask an older firefighter about climate change and they compare the first part of their career, say, 20 or 30 years ago to what's happening these days as far as wildland fires, I don't think you'll hear much debate from them either.
That is definitely a great point. Obviously, earlier this summer, we had President Obama make his speech about confronting the risks of climate change. Do you think it would be more effective if President Obama, essentially followed up that speech with another speech pointing out to the events that we've had this summer, including the wildfires, and saying essentially that, these are the stakes, and the stakes are very high, and this is why, the American people need to call upon Congress to take some action on this issue?
Well, that's certainly a good point. One thing I was pleased to notice, and one thing I did notice in several of his recent speeches over the last several months, that where he mentioned climate change, he referred to wildland fires, talked about how many more wildland fires there were and how much larger they are getting and how much more difficult they are to put out. And I know he has attended some meetings with the land management organizations, the agencies in Washington, trying to figure out how to come up with the money to put out all of these fires, because the cost of the fires is exceeding the amount that's budgeted to them. Someone just sent me an email the other day saying that the U.S. Forest Service has run out of firefighting money, and they've been directed to cut back on unnecessary spending. This one person was saying he needed a new computer monitor, but he wasn't going to be able to get that because all of that extra money is being diverted over to firefighting, even though it wasn't appropriated for that in the first place.
And before we close out, we certainly must mention the lost lives, not only to, you know, fire victims, but also firefighters, of course. We just lost, was it 17 or 19 hotshots on that tragic fire? And that is, you know, most likely fires like that, you know, fueled by climate change, making that tragedy all the more tragic. The only thing worse than that is when those connections are not made to get more Americans even more outraged. I'm sure you agree. Thanks so much for joining us, Bill Gatterd.